Welcome to Go For Side Effects. I'm your host, Kevin Simon. Your honorable co-host, John. John, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you.
And we got Tina. Tina, how are you?
Great, thanks.
Wade, how are you?
Absolutely fantastic, brother.
So us four are here tonight for a reason. I was giving a tape mysteriously. It showed up in my mailbox, and I asked Wade to do a little bit of investigation. This is the testimony. It's almost like a narrated testimony of what happened during Desert Storm by General Schwarzkopf. I know in my title I put down Desert Storm's, disgrace by, General Schwarzkopf's testimony. General Schwarzkopf was one of the best generals, along with Colin Powell, that has ever served our country. I mean, that guy went in, kicked ass. We got out. Not too many, of our veterans have died. Our service members have died during his time. So I give him a lot of credit. But what we're about to hear is his testimony. It was a prepared testimony, and it was also not swearing in testimony. And so this is going to be a two-part series. And Wade did some looking up stuff. And Wade, was there something you would like to talk about before we play this?
Yeah, this came to light because of a Desert Storm veteran by the name of Joyce Riley, who before podcast, before the internet was huge, she actually served in the Air Force. She was discharged in 1979, and during when Desert Storm started ramping up, she reenlisted into the Air Force Reserves to serve as a flight nurse on a C-130. Just to show what kind of dedication a woman had. Following a discharge after Desert Storm, she knew there was a problem. She started doing her own research, and then she started a late night AM radio show on the Power Hour. She started the original, it was called the American Gulf War Veterans Association. Back then, and that's when I came across her, was in the mid-90s. Sweet lady, willing to help anybody, talk to anybody. But back then everybody kind of thought it was more of a conspiracy, if you will, because it was on late night. She was just a wonderful woman. She has since passed. She lived to the age of 68. But she was a true patriot. She was ahead of the time, but because of her, but yeah, Joyce Riley, she's made this all possible.
And
can you give us?
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask Wade, since some people may not be aware of the location they're referencing in this tape, Wade, can you give a quick breakdown of what they're referencing of, as they're going into this tape, the location and what this is all about? I mean, what happened?
Pretty much what everybody what they're going to be talking about is going to be the quote unquote infamous Camisea complex. That was located in an area. If when you go back and look at military records, it was located in an area called Objective Gold. So there's another veteran out there. I don't want to say his name. Everybody on here should probably be following him, I'm sure. We'll call him JB, but he has posted it, and he posts maps. But Objective Gold is where Camisea Complex was located. Just an absolute, just ginormous ammunition storage supply area, and that's where all this is making reference to, and that's the main area that everybody's heard about, where the nerve agent sarin and cyclosarin and suspected muster agents were stored, that the U.S. and coalition, that we actually blew them up in turn injuring our troops.
I want to get to the testimony now. And so we're going to start it off, and we will be taking periods of time whenever we want to talk about something. So I hope y'all enjoy this. Here we go.
Since World War II, the 100-hour conflict in the Persian Gulf had resulted in an apparent victory that gave America back her pride after having to live with the shame of Vietnam for almost two decades. Our Gulf War veterans returned to smiling faces, parades, and parties. Congratulations from well-wishers gave our troops a sense of belonging that had not been experienced for over a generation. America had heroes again, and at the top of the list was General Stormin Norman Schwarzkopf, the leader of our armed forces who had led our men to a stunning victory over Saddam Hussein and his Republican Guard. However, in the years that have followed, many of our nation's guardians have fallen ill, and many have died. Thousands of our veterans have registered with the Veterans Administration and requested treatment at VA hospitals all over the country, and they've been either turned away and given a psychiatric diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder and a prescription for Prozac, Buspar, Ativan, or any other psychotropic drug that apparently serves no other purpose than to sedate them. Meanwhile, their symptoms are being passed to their families and into the general population. Until recently, the Department of Defense and the Pentagon held steadfastly that there is no Gulf War illness. This despite the overwhelming evidence that there is, including several reports from Senator Donald Regal in 1994. In 1996, the Department of Defense and the Pentagon came under intense scrutiny and has, in many of Americans' eyes, lost their credibility. Recent testimony given at the Congressional Oversight Committee hearings, chaired by Representative Christopher Shays of Connecticut, have brought to light many facts that have remained hidden, not by Saddam Hussein, but by those in the highest offices of the departments that were created to protect America and its defenders from harm. Hi, my name is Dave Riddell, and for the next hour, we'll be analyzing the testimony that General Norman Schwarzkopf gave before the Senate committee in their hearings that were held on January 29th, 1997. We'll hear General Schwarzkopf's own words as he testifies about his knowledge of the events both during and after the hostilities in the Gulf War. We'll also hear from Sergeant Dan Topolsky, who was the nuclear, biological, and chemical non-commissioned officer in charge, and he was in the bunkers at Kamisea before they were detonated. He knows exactly what was in there, and he reported it back to CENTCOM. We'll also hear from Sergeant Kevin Wright, a Marine who was assigned a security detail and served as General Norman Schwarzkopf's bodyguard. We'll also hear from Captain Joyce Riley, who's been researching the Gulf War illness for the past 4 years. I should mention on the outset that during this analysis of the Schwarzkopf testimony, you will not hear opinion or conjecture from this reporter. You will hear the words from General Schwarzkopf, from Sergeant Wright, from Sergeant Topolsky, Captain Riley, and you'll hear from the direct reports of the NBC logs, the CENTCOM reports, and Senator Regal's report of 1994. I think it's only fair to mention that as General Schwarzkopf took his seat before the Senate panel, he was not sworn in. He was not asked to take an oath to tell the truth, so help him God. Now, in his opening prepared testimony, and I want to emphasize prepared testimony, he sat down and he read a statement, and this was in his prepared statement.
I never received, before, during, or after hostilities, any report of Iraqi use of chemical weapons, nor the discovery of or destruction of Iraqi chemical weapons.
Now, this statement is very important because, as I mentioned, it was a prepared statement. It was not an impromptu, improvised response from a question that was asked of him. It was something that he'd thought out before he went to testify. Now, he said, and we'll play it again.
I never received, before, during, or after hostilities, any report of Iraqi use of chemical weapons, nor the discovery of or destruction of Iraqi chemical weapons.
Now, we're going to have to deal with this statement in two parts. The first part, I never received before, during, or after hostilities any reports of Iraqi use of chemical weapons. I now refer to the NBC, that's Nuclear Biological Chemical Desk Log, and these are the logs that General Schwarzkopf had to...
Okay, so as this gentleman's saying, keep in mind that General Schwarzkopf is like any other individual that's in charge. He's given orders. Now, the verbiage is what we all need to pay attention to with General Schwarzkopf is. It's like a contract. It's the particulars, the verbiage that we're listening to. Now, as we go on, you know, again, listen to the specific verbiage that's being said. Keep in mind, he was not under oath, but it was a prepared statement.
Right. All right, here we go. We're going to start it back up.
Review every day. This particular log is dated the 3rd of March, 1991, at 15:16 hours. And now I read, Lieutenant Colonel Wade advised that Colonel Dunn has confirmed that the soldier of the 3rd Armored Division does have blisters, characteristic of H mustard chemical agent, on his upper and lower left arm. This is clearly a report of a chemical weapon on an American troop. The second half of his statement said, nor the discovery of or the destruction of Iraqi chemical weapons. Again, we refer to the NBC desk log. This report came in on the 27th of February, 1991, at 1800 hours, and it's in reference to nuclear biological agents and munitions. It says, and I quote, they feel destruction of small quantities using field method is okay. Bulk, not defined, destruction is not approved because it may have great international implications. We also refer to the NBC desk log dated the 28th of February, 1991, and this one is dated at 1930 hours. It says here that the Fox GCMS has come up with indications of small concentrations of sulfur mustard after numerous tests. All possible inferences with petroleum products have been ruled out. They are outside the bunker now. No one has gone in. They've moved their EOD with chemical and biological munitions. How is it possible that General Schwarzkopf would not have this information at his fingertips? I again asked Sergeant Dan Topolsky to make a comment about General Schwarzkopf's testimony when it came to the identification of chemical and biological munitions.
General Schwarzkopf, you stated that you spent 40 years in the military and you could not identify an Iraqi chemical or biological munition. I spent 6.5 years in the military, and after reading the publications, I could detect chemicals and biological agents by their markings on the munitions. Biologicals being the green bands, chemicals being the yellow or purple bands. We knew what we were dealing with when we blew up that bunker or that bunker complex. We sent the information to you as to what we suspected was in those bunkers, and you or your staff told us to blow it anyway. You knew exactly what was in there prior to the detonation.
Ladies and gentlemen, I realize that this testimony being given by Sergeant Dan Topolsky is damning, to say the least, towards General Schwarzkopf's testimony. I think it's important at this time that we get a little bit of a background on Sergeant Topolsky, so I asked him to make a statement and let us know a little bit about himself.
I just thought that was interesting, going back to the 28th February of 91, that testimony. I'm referring back to the redacted report on the inquiry for Camisea demolition of Iraqi munitions report, where in that report, towards the bottom, it does go back and it talks about General Schwarzkopf orders the cessation of offensive coalition activities. But at the bottom, it does that the CENTCOM surgeon concludes that the injury was caused by exposure to liquid mustard chemical warfare agent. And that is actually in the report, in this report. I just thought that was interesting how that lines up with that testimony.
Well,
that
and the complex was over 9 miles square. That is 9 miles square, ladies and gentlemen. That's over the size of the complex.
That's amazing, too, because right, that lines up when our chemical alarms alerted during that time frame.
The complex they're referring to there is actually different than the Camisea complex as far as the mustard agent exposure. Mm-hmm. But where it talked about how Schwarzkopf didn't have knowledge of it in his testimony there, but then in this report it says that, you know, it's saying that yes, it was confirmed that there was mustard agent exposure.
Oh yeah,
exactly. You see what I'm saying?
All right, we're going to start it back up. I'm going to start it back up because the next part to me is the most interesting.
My name is Dan Topolsky. I was a sergeant promotable. I was the NBC NCO for B Company, 37th Engineer Battalion. I was the commander's main advisor on all aspects pertaining to nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare. I also was on the Commissia Bunker Complex mission. I am extremely appalled by the stance that my leaders have taken. The disinformation that's out there through the government and the government bureaucracies, it's allowing them to keep us from being treated. It's allowing them to, or enabling them to deny us just compensation for our disabilities. The entire situation completely and thoroughly disgusts me, because they are not willing to tell the truth in order to remain politically correct within certain circles up in Washington, D.C. I suffer from most of the symptoms, all but about two, for the Mycoplasma fermentans incognitus. I've been diagnosed as having organophosphate delayed effect neurotoxicity as a direct result of being exposed to nerve agents. My wife, within the last year, has had five surgeries. Of any of them, she has yet to find any comfort. All three of my children are sick. They have headaches, joint pains, skin rashes. I have a dog that has degenerative joint disease. And just recently, our medical insurance has been terminated because we used up our lifetime amount over the course of the last 2 years.
Ladies and gentlemen, I think it bears mentioning that when 60 Minutes did their research and assembled that panel from the 37th Engineering Battalion.
I'm going to stop her right there. Somehow it jumped way ahead of what it was supposed to. And I'm going to start about right here. Somehow it just jumped ahead.
International implications. We also refer to the NBC desk log dated the 28th of February, 1991, and this one is dated at 1930 hours. It says here that the Fox GCMS has come up with indications of small concentrations of sulfur mustard after numerous tests. All possible inferences with petroleum products have been ruled out. They are outside the bunker now. No one has gone in. They've moved their EOD people up, but won't do anything until the morning. Now, these NBC desk logs apparently contradict what General Schwarzkopf had testified to in the Senate committee hearings on that January afternoon. So at this time, we'd like to bring in Sergeant Dan Topolsky from the United States Army. Once again, he was the nuclear, biological, and chemical non-commissioned officer in charge. He was at Kamisea, and he was in the bunkers before they detonated them. Now, this is what Sergeant Topolsky had to say about General Schwarzkopf's opening statement.
General Schwarzkopf is lying. He knew all the way through the air campaign that they were getting positive readings, and we were getting positive readings for nerve agents and blister agents and Lewisite mustard agents on all of our detection devices, everything from the M8 alarm all the way up to the Fox vehicles. I have congressional testimony, I have my own personal knowledge, and I also have copies of his own NBC logs from CENTCOM that he read every single day. He had knowledge of it all the way through.
Those sound like pretty powerful words from...
I'm going to stop her right there. I wanted to play that part over again. For one reason, he had the logs. Logs don't lie. But where do you think the logs went to? Do you think they still have them? Or do you think they got rid of them?
I think they have them. I just don't think they'll ever see the light of day.
Yeah,
it's like it's just like how all of our medical records for those who had immediate reactions in theater, those are gone. They never made it back.
Right, exactly. And that's why I want to replay that, because I thought that was important. because I was like, what happened to the logbooks? I always wondered that, because every ship, every command had a logbook. That's what I want everybody to know. We're going to start it up again.
One who was charged with the responsibility of identifying all the munitions in the bunkers at Kamisea before they were destroyed. We'll get back to Sergeant Topolsky's comments a little bit later, but now we'd like to return to General Schwarzkopf's prepared statement as he began his testimony before the Senate panel.
Certain people, for reasons of their own, have charged that I and my commanders knowingly placed our troops at risk to chemical weapons while we sought protection for ourselves and subsequently engaged in cover-ups of chemical contamination of our troops. Such a statement at best demonstrates an abysmal ignorance of the standards of conduct that we expect of all military leaders and our armed forces today, and at worst is a blatant lie, which strikes at the heart of our armed forces, since it undermines the confidence of the mothers and fathers of America who place the well-being of their sons and daughters in our hands.
Tina, I'm not able to hear.
I just find this piece hugely ironic, and I think it's kind of telling how emotionally, like, aggressive he seems to be getting saying this. Like, he's trying to bully down anyone who says that, you know, this happened. Hopefully that's some shame surfacing for the job he's having to do in this hearing. But I just thought it was ironic that it's a blatant lie. It's ignorance. It's, you know, I just thought that struck me that.
And me too, because he sounded angry. And if you have nothing to hide, there's no need to get angry. All right, we're going to jump back to it, because now we're about to get into Wade's part. And I learned a lot about Wade this last Monday that I was so shocked. But now we're going to get into this part, and a lot of this has to do with Wade.
Such a statement cannot be allowed to stand unchallenged.
Well, for General Schwarzkopf to make such a statement in his prepared testimony leads one to believe that somebody somewhere at some time had made some statements questioning his integrity. We're now going to hear a statement from Sergeant Kevin Wright from the United States Marines.
My name is Kevin Wright. I'm a sergeant, retired from Marine Corps, and I was attached to Central Command Joint Visitors Bureau in the region of Saudi Arabia, Doha, Iran, Kuwait, and Iraq. And while I was over there, I did see in Doha, Iran, an airburst with a Scud missile coming in. Nothing touched it. And a cloud odor that came out. And it was stated by a lot of people that it was a chemical attack. The chemical alarms went off. I was there. I took the pills. I took the shots. I signed my name on a dotted line to protect and guard this country and the interests of this country. And now I'm sick. My wife and my daughter did not sign that dotted line to deploy anywhere. I did. And now my family's affected. My life is affected. I can't work. I'm in pain every day of my life. And over there, I seen it. I heard it. And it happened. And I can't understand. My question is why, General Schwarzkopf, would you sit there and say that your main priority is the welfare of your troops? And your troops are sick. We're very sick. And you're going to sit there and not stand up and help us? I thought of you as a gentleman. I cannot think of you more than anything but a traitor for doing this and not speaking out to help your people. General Schwarzkopf, I was your bodyguard. My job was to protect you. And I'm sick, and why can't you protect us? It's not right, and you know it. What all the think should be done right now is that the president, President Bush...
This footage from this videotape,
or knew about Kamisea prior to 1990.
I want to just say this. I accidentally pressed the wrong button on there. That was his bodyguard.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to jump in on that too. And for those who aren't in the military, first of all, like, you know, commanders, they have their drivers, whatever. Those folks are cherry picked. they're cherry picked because they're the cream of the crop, the most compliant. They're just, you know, reliable. So for this person to be a bodyguard to this general, he had to have a Yankee white clearance. He had been vetted through the teeth. So for this man to sit here and say this, it shouldn't be taken lightly. He's just not some little flippant private that's running his mouth. He was put through the paces to have the role that he had.
No, I totally agree. Now we're going to jump back to it. I may jump too far back, but that'd be fine.
And you're going to sit there and not stand up and help us? I thought of you as a gentleman. I cannot think of you more than anything but a traitor for doing this and not speaking out to help your people. General Schwarzkopf, I was your bodyguard. My job was to protect you. And I'm sick, and why can't you protect us? It's not right. And you know it. What ought to be, think be, should be done right now is that the President, President Bush, General Powell, General Schwarzkopf, I signed the dotted line. We all did. Don't lie to the American people. Speak out the truth. Speak it out now. It's been too long.
I don't believe that anything else needs to be said about Sergeant Wright's comments. We'll let them stand on their own. Let's return now to General Schwarzkopf's testimony, and we'll get back to the events at Kamisiyah. This is what General Schwarzkopf had to say about Kamisiyah.
As I stated, the first time I ever heard of Kamisiyah was in 1996 when it was first announced by the Department of Defense, and nobody was more surprised than I was.
Now, Sergeant Topolsky has a comment about Schwarzkopf's prior knowledge of Kamisiyah, but before we let you hear what Sergeant Topolsky has to say, let's fast forward about, 25 or 30 minutes into the testimony when General Schwarzkopf again had to answer a question about Kamisiyah.
I remember General Franks came to me, and I assume it was Kamisiyah he was talking about at the time, because it was about the same time frame, and talked about this huge ammunition dump that they had found with literally tons and tons and tons of ammunition in it, and there was no way they could possibly retrograde it. And I challenged him on that, and he convinced me that, no, they couldn't retrograde it, and therefore they were going to destroy it in place. And I said, fine, now that's Kamisiyah.
Now, that statement seems to directly contradict his first statement, which was, again,
As I stated, the first time I ever heard of Kamisiyah was in 1996 when it was first announced by the Department of Defense, and nobody was more surprised than I was.
After viewing General Schwarzkopf's testimony, which, by the way, was broadcast on C-SPAN nationwide and was replayed twice, I asked Dan Topolsky to make his comment in regard to General Schwarzkopf's knowledge of Kamisiyah.
General Schwarzkopf, I know for a fact that you know or knew about Kamisiyah prior to 1996. I was there. My name is Dan Topolsky. I was a sergeant. I was the NBC NCO for the 37th Engineer Battalion. I was in those bunkers. I identified suspected chemical agents and biological agents. I sent the information forward. We were instructed to blow it up anyway. And I am appalled that you will...
What's up, Tanner?
I just think, you know, that right now that we're in a double-edged sword, right? So if I'm General Schwarzkopf, either I'm admitting I got people downrange blowing a whole 9-mile area up and I don't have any idea it's happening, and that means I don't have control of my troops or what's going on in theater, or I'm full of it, right? I'm covering down. So I think that's kind of interesting. People should think about that too. What general wouldn't know that happened?
Right, exactly. Well, you know, as they say, you know, a lot of people were like, well, was he in theater? Well, yes, he was. Because, I mean, we've even had a guest on that said that she knew he was in the bunker. We just had a bodyguard. And here comes the next part that really puts a whole light onto what really happened out there. Are y'all ready?
Take the stance that you did not have any knowledge of it when we gave you the information and we were instructed from higher, which is you, to blow it anyway.
Now, I think at this time it would be advantageous for us to elaborate just a little bit of what Camisea was all about. Contrary to what the mainstream press and media would have you believe, Camisea was not just one bunker. It was, in essence, a city of bunkers. It was 100 bunkers and 40 warehouses, each the size of a Walmart. We're talking about approximately 7,500 tons of sarin gas. That's 7.5 million pounds, by the way. We're also talking about 2,500 tons of mustard gas. And again, that's 2.5 million pounds. Now, this whole story would never have come to light if it hadn't been for one soldier who brought a video camera inside the bunker and photographed these munitions before they were detonated. This videotape was presented to those at CBS's 60 Minutes program, and because of that, they did do a story, some of you may have seen it, in which Sergeant Topolsky and other members of the 37th Engineering Battalion got to tell their stories. But one of the things that they did not get to tell you, and one of the things that they did not show you from that videotape, was the fact that many of these munitions that were destroyed had American markings on them. Again, Sergeant Dan Topolsky.
You knew that we identified biological agents and chemical agents, nerve gas, mustard gas, and suspected biological agents within that bunker complex. And that was only what we could see on the surface because we were instructed not to disturb anything. So what was behind them is completely and totally unknown. And you know as well as I do that you and your staff did not allow the use of biological detectors within the entire theater of operations. If there was any biologicals in that bunker, and I suspect there was, if there was any biologicals in those bunkers, you knew about it.
And that's where we're going to stick with part one right there. And we'll go next week will be part two because it kind of splits. And that's one thing about listening to what we have. It splits. Now, Wade, this is where I'm coming to you. Where were you located around this time?
Well, that's what I discussed with you before. Going back to the redacted from the Camisea report, my unit was the 2nd of the 505th Parachute Infantry Regiment from the 82nd Airborne. And during the insertion, we filed the 24th ID all the way through. And then going back to the report and my unit history, as far as Camisea is concerned, the 2505th PIR, Parachute Infantry Regiment, was the first coalition force to reach and enter the Camisea complex. And that's what I had told you before that, yes, I was there. I was young. I was a cherry. I basically did what I was told. But I do remember during that time, and I remember we got a lot of prisoners. The unit history says we captured 186. I sent you pictures of sitting in anti-aircraft armament, which were outside of the complex, which were American anti-aircraft guns that we had supplied to Iraq. And we all took our hero pictures before the engineers blew them up. And then we stayed in those same little holes during the explosions of the Camisea complex. As the explosions were going on, that's where we actually hung out and watched it.
And this is, I have a question. I don't mean to interrupt, but I have this question. You just told me this on Monday out of how many years I've known you. And you can ask Wade, I was blown away. I couldn't, I don't mean that, you know, but I literally was shocked at the fact that you were there and you're still here today.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, ditto.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's what I was saying about we had our reunion, what was it, 2 years ago now, and everybody at the reunion, NCOs and officers alike, our battalion commander showed up at the reunion, and everybody was there. And to include, and I keep going back and I keep saying it, but the Secretary of Defense right now is Lloyd Austin. And Lloyd Austin was in my battalion during Desert Storm. So he knows.
Right. And see, why isn't anybody being held accountable? Like, I mean, they should literally, everybody should be jumping at him saying, it's time for you to step up, do what you're supposed to do. I mean,
because it would cost money.
I mean, that's true. That's true. They'll keep the money while we suffer. And that's exactly, that's the problem I have.
And it was already stated by one of these NCOs that our families are affected. The post-Gulf War children.
Well, that's what we're going to get to.
Spouses.
Does anyone remember when we first got back, the whole thing? And I don't know if it was rumor or what, but I just remember hearing that there were, like, children that were being born almost immediately, you know, when everybody got back.
Right.
Had holes in their hearts. They had all these health and birth defects
that's happening. What we're going to get into next week. What I want to concentrate on the fact is Wade's had cancer. And I know that Colin Powell and Schwarzkopf were also in Vietnam, but they have cancers, all covered under the PACT Act. And that's the one thing that is gets me is, yes, I understand that Vietnam, the Agent Orange, could have played a big factor along with Desert Storm in them getting cancer. And I know with Colin Powell that there was other problems and General Schwarzkopf, but that played a factor also, Desert Storm, that they got cancers, because Schwarzkopf's had a lot of the cancers that most of the other guys have got. Mm-hmm. I mean, the mysterious bleeding.
You look at the ratio of those types of cancers, right?
And, right.
You know, do some kind of analysis on the death statistics.
Well, that's what I would like the VA to do is tell me how many people had prostate cancer from Desert Storm, how many people had blood cancer from Desert Storm. Mm-hmm. You know, Desert Storm's time up, just see. And I bet you a lot of people, and heart attacks. I believe heart conditions are really, really big thing.
Now, I do... I don't particularly want to talk on open until we discuss it in the after show, but on the second half of this tape is something that I really want to discuss again next week that I think is really pertinent that we haven't brought up yet, but it will directly pertain to biologicals and what the testimony is going to bring up that I think is going to be another interesting subject.
And after the second part, where he will release the whole entire tape. It's about 30 minutes long. We will have it out there. You can hear it all in one setting. But we wanted to go through this. I know I messed some of it up. Sorry, but you know I'm new at you know stuff.
You're doing fine,
right? But the major part was we got to hear the first 15 minutes. And it went by really quick. That's the one thing. When I was listening to this, that 15 minutes pissed me off for the whole week.
I'm with you.
The second half will piss me off for the next week. And I mean, but it explains a lot. The one thing that I was listening to Rack. Did y'all get on the thing for Rack? And listen, that we have a new guy in charge of that. He seems to be very caring. I believe he's an Air Force guy who I think he was in Desert Storm. And he, to me, that guy sounded genuine, like more than I've ever heard before. But the one thing they keep focusing on is fibromyalgia, IBS, and chronic fatigue. No. neurological disorders.
Neurological. Those are all neurological. They're all autoimmune all of it. Responses. Yes.
Thank you. And start saying neurological disorders. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing that I would love for everybody to get in there and listen to the Rack Talk, because all they do, I understand fibromyalgia. A lot of people got it. IBS, a lot of people got it. Chronic fatigue, everybody's got it. Neurological disorders, everybody has. Everybody has neurological disorders from Desert Storm.
So think about this. Those PB tabs, right? What was their job? What was their role? We later found out that those were experimental drugs that were given to us. They weren't even like, so their job was to, help us to continue working through a neurological agent attack, right? So yep. We ended up with a neurological agent attack through sarin gas at some point, right? With what happened. Maybe they were proofing or testing their product. I don't know. But at the end of the day, you can't tell me that you gave me something that was supposed to alter my neurological system, and that now then I have neurological disorders that they're not related. And they have to be.
And on top of that, the PT tabs, y'all go look. The side effects.
I still actually have in my possession some of those.
You
shouldn't have said that. You're going to disappear.
But I want to thank everybody for listening tonight. Next week, we're going to have part two. And next week is where I really get upset. And because that's where, to me, it hits home the most, is our family and our kids. So we're going to have part two next week. And please come join us, you know, talk in the chats. And we will see y'all. And we're going to go into the after show now. Thank y'all for listening.